Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spider. So as the title indicates, we're going to be talking about substrate again. And I do this occasionally or periodically because over the course of the past several years, I've gone through many, we'll call them phases of what I use for substrate. And I think what confuses people sometimes is I tend to switch things up because I'm always looking for something better or something, in some cases, less expensive. And I will put stuff in videos and people will come back and it'll be like an older video and they'll go, hey, this is great. Thanks so much for the information. What are you using for substrate there? And I have to like go through and watch a video, figure out which time period it is. Cause sometimes I, back in the day, I didn't leave the little notes where I said, hey, this is what I'm using, and try to figure out what the heck I was using at that time. And it can really depend on what year it was, honestly. And some things like I use, I circle back to. I just had this week four different people come on the videos. Now, in two of the cases, it clearly said my notes. I put these little notes on my videos, so I hope that people can just pause them while they're watching the video and take down notes if they need to, like, oh, what's he using for substrate? Oh, it says right here he's using BioDude. It says right here he's using cocoa fiber, whatever it may be. And unfortunately, some people, I think, don't bother to read the notes or miss the notes. So two of the cases, it was clearly spelled out, but two of the cases, they were older videos, and one of them was where I used just straight topsoil. One of them is when I was using a mixture. So then I have to kind of figure out where we were and tell them what I use now, what I use back then. So it can be confusing, and I get it. And I think for a lot of us, part of the fun of the hobby is mixing the substrate. I've spoken to many people. It's like a couple little side hobbies that come with keeping tarantulas. One of them is walking into a store that sells containers and trying to figure out what your next tarantula enclosure is going to be. I have to go to Walmart later on. I have some Lephistis species coming in that I'm super stoked about. But after ordering them, I realized I didn't have anything that would allow a proper setup here. So I'm thinking of going back to the old school. I used these a while ago and I like them for some things. The mainstay containers, they have the little half gallon ones. I think it'll be perfect because it'll give them enough depth without them, you know, drowning in it, and enough floor space up top for them to do the little web lines. But those are the things I know I'm going to go there today, and I'm going to start walking through those aisles. And it's not just going to be, all right, I have a goal. It's to grab three of these containers or four of these containers. But what's going to end up happening is I'm going to go in there and I'm going to start checking out a bunch of other containers, go, what could this work for? This would be good for a juvenile arboreal. This might be good for a terrestrial. This one here would be great for something like Saburo. And so I think a lot of us find ourselves roped into that side of the hobby where no matter, it's a running joke, and I've seen memes of it out there where it's like, for a hobbyist to walk into any type of establishment that sells a myriad of containers, it's like a toy store to us. We go through and we just go nuts. The other thing I think a lot of us do is, again, the experimentation with the substrates. Now, let me put this out there because I don't want people thinking that I'm being a snob about this. I'm not. I have used premium substrates. I've used the BioDude. I use the BioDude stuff for years, and it's great stuff. But the problem is when you have a collection of 250 and you rehouse something, it's happened to me a couple times where you rehouse something, it's a mature male, within a year or so, it's dead. You're dumping all, I'm watching myself dump gobs of money out into that soil pile in my backyard. And I'm kind of tired of doing it. So, and I think with the BioDude stuff, so before anybody asks, I still like the BioDude stuff. I will still probably buy some more of it in the future, but it just got to the point with when the pandemic hit, it seemed like the prices started going up because shipping was becoming more expensive. I totally understand on that level, everything's gone up. Let's call it as it is. But it got to the point where it kind of priced itself out for me, especially when rehousing bigger spiders. Right now, I'm looking at a video I'm really looking forward to doing is rehousing the three Theraphosa species, Theraphosa blondii, Theraphosa sturmi, and Theraphosa apophysis. And all three of them, two of them have molted already. I'm waiting for one of them to molt. And they are going into enclosures that are over 10 gallons or over. So that's a lot of space to fill with dirt because I'm not going to set these up terrestrial with just a couple inches on the bottom. You got to give them room to burrow. I found that my T. blondii female that I rehoused several years ago into a 10-gallon enclosure, she has a burrow anytime she gets disturbed right in the burrow. So I want to make sure they all have that. My T. sturmi has been burrowing. She just molted. She came out of her burrow to molt. There apparently wasn't enough room in there for her, but I want to give her room to burrow. And then my apophysis, same thing. She's in one of those 10-gallon reptile enclosures where they got the barbarous growth, we'll call them. They've changed the name of it, but she's in one of those. She's got several inches of substrate. She is always in her burrow. I have to come up at night, sneak up at night to catch her out. So there's three species that are going to want to do some burrowing in larger enclosures. You figure if it's a 10-gallon enclosure, conservatively, almost half of it will be filled up with substrate. So that's 5 gallons of substrate, maybe closer to 4, but around 4 to 5 gallons of substrate. If I buy the premium stuff, that's a lot of money. And I found that with some of the BioDude stuff, it's great for holding moisture, but I have a hard time sometimes if it dries up a little bit, getting the moisture back in it. So I sometimes it's easier for me to play with mixtures to get a mixture that I like. And as time has gone on, I've actually gone back to a mixture that I used, probably 7-8 years ago. And I don't know why I gravitated away from it. Oh, I know why I gravitated away from it. We had the issue with the soil, the topsoil. And I got a bit freaked out by the fact that I could buy something from a store that was supposedly organic. It could be filled with chemicals. It could kill my spiders. So I moved away from that. That's where I kind of transitioned into the BioDude stuff. He had just come out with it. He had contacted me, asked if I wanted to try some out. I love this stuff. I really do. It's just, again, it comes down to I could buy a bunch of BioDude substrate to fill these enclosures, or I could have some money on the side to buy some new spiders. So not a very difficult decision. So today what we're going to talk about is I'm going to go through and I'm going to basically talk about the phases I've gone through as far as what I've used for substrate, why I continue to evolve, and then what I'm using today. And then what I'm hoping to give folks. Now, I'm going to apologize in advance for folks that are overseas, the UK, Europe, because I didn't translate all of these into the metric system. I've kind of, the stuff that's sold over here, a lot of it is obviously not in the metric system. So I would ask, and I'm going to put this out there first, that at the end of this, obviously, you're going to get some ideas. And I'm assuming some people overseas have access to some of the things I'm about to talk about today. If you do, if you could chime in with some what you use and what the mixtures are, what the volumes are, I would appreciate it so much, because I'm always trying to keep these podcasts and the videos from being just US centric, meaning I want anybody from any place on the planet to be able to listen to these and go, oh, this is information I can use. And unfortunately today, a lot of it's going to be US centric because the stuff that I'm going to be talking about buying, I'm picking up in the US. But if somebody out there has mixtures that they use, if they're able to get this stuff, let me know. Are you able to get it? What's the cost? What volumes is it in? If you can give me links to it, and then next podcast, we can break it down and do like a version for overseas. That would be fantastic. I would, you know, obviously thank you in the podcast, be incredibly appreciative. So I just want to put that out there because as I was putting this together, A, it had me doing math on a weekend, which I absolutely abhor. I'm an English person. Can I do math? Yes. I've taught some math, you know, remedial math stuff before. Do I like doing math? Not particularly. Do I like doing math on a weekend? Heck no. So I didn't want to have to try to do a translation of this and convert it over to the metric system and then have people go, well, it really doesn't matter because we can't get that over here anyway. So hopefully some of you fine folks in Europe, the UK, my Filipino fans, please feel free to chime in what you guys can use over there, what you have access to. And then at the end of the podcast, what I hope to present to you guys is a very inexpensive way to mix up a lot of substrate. We're going to do it kind of like the most inexpensive way to get the most bang for your buck, and it works. And then what it costs, you know, what are some of the things you can add to it to make it a little more versatile, for lack of a better word? What are some things you can add to it if you need more moisture? What are some things you can add to it if you just want it to, you know, create maybe kind of a planted environment, things of that nature. So we'll have the cheap version and then what you can do to add into it. And hopefully this will give some folks some ideas and a springboard for what to do then. Now, I'm not telling everybody, I want to make this clear too, because every time you do something like this, somebody comes on and goes, well, I'm not doing that. I use this. Use whatever works for you. I get a lot of questions asking, hey, what are you using for substrate these days? And I can always tell when somebody's been watching my channel or listening to my podcast for a while because they recognize the fact that I am constantly evolving and changing what I use. So let's kick it off, a brief history for what I've used for substrates. Now, I got my first tarantulas way back in the 90s. And this is, I want to make this very clear. I know some folks will sit there and be like, Tom's been keeping from the 90s. No, Tom got his first two tarantulas in the 90s. I wasn't privy to a lot of great information back then. I wasn't what I would call a hobbyist. At that point, I was keeping 40 snakes. I did have a couple tarantulas that I absolutely adored. And obviously one of them was the queen and she was around for a while. But how much did I improve my keeping over that time period? Yes, I did. But it was very slowly and incrementally. It wasn't like nowadays where I was constantly constantly, or when I really got deep into the hobby, when I was constantly devouring everything I could get a hold of. It was one of those deals where every couple of years I'd do some research and look up something about the quote unquote rose hair tarantula and go, oh, we're not doing this anymore. We're doing it this way. So I want to make that very clear. But back in the 90s, obviously I had the G. Porteri slash Rosea. I had the Afana Pelma Simani. And back then, the big thing everybody was using for substrate, we're talking mid 90s or so, was vermiculite. It was incredibly popular. The majority of things that I read said, oh yeah, these are terrestrial spiders. You pour some vermiculite in there, you moisten down a corner of it, you put a water dish in there with a big old sponge, and your spider will be happy as can be. Now, obviously, some of that changed over the years and we got a little more wise to it. But the queen in particular was on about 2 inches of vermiculite for, I have to estimate on this one, the first 14 years of her life. I had her in one of the Sterilite plastic shoe boxes. She had the vermiculite. And I would keep a water dish in there. I stopped spraying very early on, but it worked pretty well. I mean, it was just, it wasn't that bad. However, what ended up happening was I went to change the substrate at one point because I heard people start saying, nah, vermiculite isn't a good enough substrate. They can't burrow in it. It's, you know, you should mix it with other stuff. And at that point, there was a scare in the 90s, late 90s, I think, around that time period, where there was asbestos in the vermiculite. Now, I believe the history of this was they had vermiculite being cross-contaminated because there was also an asbestos mine close by, and the stuff got tested, had high levels of asbestos in it, which obviously is something you do want near your animals or yourself. So they stopped selling it for a while. You couldn't find it anywhere. I was like freaking out, like, what's going on? Looked up on the internet, and they're like, yeah, they're taking it off the market because of this issue. Now, apparently they've remedied this. However, yes, if you do some research, you'll find out there can be trace amounts of asbestos in vermiculite. So that's something they say, it's not a dangerous amount in most cases. Obviously, you should be working with the stuff in a ventilated area. Moistening it down beforehand is a great way to work, but that is something to keep in mind if you're using vermiculite. Honestly, this stuff's powdery as it is, so always use, anytime mixing dirt or substrate, always have a respirator on or mask on in the very least. But yes, you can look up some of the ones out there that are not, you won't have any. They did find, I believe the EPA study showed that some contained very low levels of asbestos. It was considered to be a low risk for people, but just something to keep in mind when we get into this later on talking about vermiculite use. But in the 90s, there was a lot of it in there. It was a huge issue. They took it off the shelves, so I had to change, and that's when I discovered the fact that people were using this thing called cocoa fiber, and everyone used it. It was a new big thing for tarantulas, so I got some cocoa fiber. It was in a bag. It was moist. I put it in there, and the poor queen hung out on the sides of her enclosure for a couple weeks until it dried out. That's when I learned that, A, they don't like it when it's wet, and then she came down on it. I realized I didn't pack it down real tight. And I realized they don't like it when it's fluffy. So I used cocoa fiber. Like a lot of us entering the hobby, cocoa fiber seems to be the entry level substrate that most people start with because it's readily available. It can be inexpensive if you don't buy the Zoomed or whatever the name brand stuff made just for pets. All it is, they're charging you more money for the same exact stuff. So cocoa fiber, moved into cocoa fiber for a bit. Then I started getting the yellow, what I thought was mold. I realize now it's a harmless fungus that makes these wonderful alien-like mushrooms that bloom seemingly overnight. I was freaking out about this. I'm like, I have to change this. And then somebody said, you know what? Peat is awesome because it's got a high acid content, or it's acidic, more acidic, and it prevents the mold or fungus from growing. So I picked up a big bale of peat. I set up a couple enclosures with them. They were fossorial species. And within a couple weeks, I had mushrooms coming out everywhere. So I don't know where that came from, but my bags definitely had the mushrooms. So I immediately pivoted away from peat. And that's when I moved to topsoil. I was on arachnoboards doing a lot of research, like trying to figure out what is everybody using. A lot of the folks that have been in the hobby for a while use just straight up topsoil. So I moved into keeping them just on topsoil for a bit. Now, the topsoil worked great except for 2 issues. Number one, it was very difficult once the topsoil started to dry out to add water to it the way I would normally like to. So what would happen is I'd set up a fossorial. It would start off nice and moist. It was wonderful to work with. It packed down really well because this is stuff that naturally had clay and sand and other stuff in it that really made it pack well. It made great substrate for burrows. The spider would get down there. It would burrow. It would start to dry out. I'd pour water on the top and it would just puddle and turn to mud. It wasn't filtering down through the way I would like it to. The other thing was, it was heavy as heck. I was using these Sterilite bins for my fossorial species. I'd fill them up with like 9 inches of this stuff. These things were heavy. So after doing this for a little while, I started thinking, all right, I have this big bag of peat in the garage. Cocoa fiber, at this point, I had found that you could order it online in big 10-pound bricks. And at this point, you could, if you played your cards right and got them when they were on sale, you're talking $12 for a 10-pound brick. And then I had the topsoil that was really cheap. Why don't I try mixing some of this stuff together? So that's when mixing came around. I threw in cocoa fiber. I threw in peat. I threw in topsoil. I threw in vermiculite to add the ability for that water to absorb into the substrate better, to percolate down to where I wanted it. I would often lay down a layer of moist vermiculite on the bottom of the enclosure before I started filling it up with the substrate mix. And it worked great for me for a long time. And then I got the winter came. I needed to set something up. I didn't have bags of topsoil. And I went to a place I normally don't buy it from because everybody else, if you go to Lowe's or Home Depot, they usually shrink wrap the stuff, pack it up, and you can't get it in the wintertime or it's frozen. So this place had it was Agway. They had the quote unquote organic topsoil. I picked up two bags of that. And that's what ended up, I added this to my mixes. That's what ended up me losing a bunch of spiders. And then after that, I got a little gun shy. I was like, all right, if this can happen, if they can sell stuff out there that has these poisons in them, where else could this happen? What else could be cocoa fiber that was contaminated? Could it be peat that's contaminated? I freaked out. And that's when I got contacted by the bio dude. And he's like, hey, I've got this new product. It's just for spiders. Would you mind if I send you some? And normally I don't take free things. I don't like taking free things. However, he was offered, I wasn't going to buy this stuff on my own until I tried it out. So I tried it. He sent me a bunch of other stuff. The only stuff I stuck with was the actual substrate. And I used that for many, many years. However, a couple years ago, I kind of went back and cheated on the BioDude a bit and started making my own again. And I picked up a bunch of stuff and tried to basically replicate what was in the BioDude stuff. Had some great results with that. Enjoyed using it. And now I move forward and I have another mixture. And basically, it's my old mixture again. And what's great about this is it makes so much substrate, and you can do the cheap version, which we're going to talk about in a minute. You can do the more expensive version where you buy some extra additives. The good thing is the extra additives will add some cost to the overall, you know, price of this substrate. However, they last a long time, and we'll get into that. So the new version of what I'm using is basically a combination of cocoa fiber, peat, and topsoil with some vermiculite rolled in. Does that sound familiar? Because that's what I was using several years ago. I went back to that old concoction. I will talk about a variation of this that you can use if you don't want to use vermiculite. I completely understand. I've used it for years without issue, but I do get if people are like, you know what, I don't even want to play that game. So here is the breakdown of what I'm currently using. And I'm going to, at the end of this, I built a little chart and put a chart together to kind of talk about, all right, this is how much bang you're getting for your buck. Now, please, I want to make this clear. A lot of these, although I tried to do the calculations with the math and everything, they're ballpark. They're approximations. Like a couple of the things I'm going to talk about here, I got a funny feeling. Like peat, for example, it's sold in a certain quantity, but it fluffs up a great deal. The cocoa fiber, depending on how much water you add, can give you more cocoa fiber here. This is kind of a ballpark figure. So if somebody sits down and bangs out and all the math again, they go, hey, actually, you were off by a couple gallons. I probably am. It's just to drive home the point of how much extra material you can get and how little overall it can cost you. So first ingredient we're going to use cocoa fiber. Now, do not pick up a bag of cocoa fiber from the store. Don't ignore those things, the Petco cocoa fiber, don't even look at. Do not buy the little bricks. Go out, hey, I'm going to buy 8 of these little bricks at Petco for $35 each or whatever exorbitant amount they're asking for them now. What we're going to do is we're going to hop on Amazon. We're going to look for the horticultural ones that are sold in 10 to 11 pound bricks. One is made, the last one I bought was by Verdana. It was one 10-pound brick. Kempf used to make one. It was 11 pounds for a brick. And now they sell it four bricks, but still 11 pounds. So if you can get like several of the bricks together, as long as you're looking for something around 10 or 11 pounds. Now, if you get those and you price shop, last ones I bought, I spent $14 on a 10-pound brick, which is not bad at all when you consider the fact that it makes 68 to 70 quarts of substrate or 17 to 18 gallons. That is a lot of dirt right off the bat. Now, I would encourage folks that are going to use this technique, go out, buy the biggest Sterilite tub you can get, because what I usually like to do is I take this brick out. It's nice to do it in the summertime when you can get the garden hose out, and you just spray the garden hose on it, let that stuff break up, keep it nice and moist. If you want to dry some of it out ahead of time, what I like to do is lay it out in the sun, let it dry out naturally, but you can get a lot of material, 17 to 18 gallons for this. And again, it's all about shopping smart. Take this stuff, put it in your cart, wait for it to drop. I've seen it go up to $35 for a 10-pound brick. We're not spending that kind of money on this. We're going to wait till it drops, which is what I did last time. I kept checking my cart. Every time I go on, does this thing drop? It dropped down at one point when I put it in my cart. It was around $25, $14 or so, done. So there's a big chunk of our substrate right there. Now, the next thing we're going to add to it, we're going to add peat. I bought a bunch of bales of the Premier Sphagnum peat moss at Lowe's several years ago. It was either Lowe's or Home Depot. Both of them sell it. And again, this is something you probably don't want to ship to your home unless you can find a farm supplier or a gardening store that'll give you free shipping, because the shipping usually jacks up the price quite a bit. I've seen these bales, same bales, selling for $50 with shipping included. We want to keep it from getting too pricey. So they usually sell for $23.98, $24 for a large bale that is 3 cubic feet or around 19 gallons, 77 quarts. And the good thing about this stuff is it's packed really tight. You can actually break like little ledges of it off and then it crumbles up. So it kind of fluffs up a little bit. So there we add another 17 gallons or so, 18 gallons or 68 or 70 quarts of material to add to our mix. So now we're up to again, we had a lot of dirt before, and now we have almost twice as much dirt, more than twice as much dirt. So a lot of substrate for not a lot of money. Now, some folks don't want to use peat. I have a bunch of it left, so I'm still using it. People that don't want to use peat because it's not environmentally friendly, and there's some concerns over that. I've heard there's some places where they can harvest it and it's not hurting the environment. I've heard others have told me that it's tearing apart the environment because it takes so long to make peat. If you don't want to use peat, I completely understand. I'm using up what I got, but there are other alternatives, and we'll get into that in a moment. So now we have our cocoa fiber bricks. We have our peat. The nice thing about these two ingredients is the peat tends to be a little more fluffy, powdery, dusty, and it doesn't, once it absorbs water, my God, does it hold on to it, but it takes a little more to get it to absorb water. Cocoa fiber is wonderful because it absorbs water readily, but it gets fluffy and it dries out more easily. So we're using two properties there, the denseness, the powderiness of the peat, combining it with that moist cocoa fiber. So when you mix them up, you're going to have this cocoa fiber that you probably have way too much water in than you actually need. That's when we start shoveling in the peat. And you shovel in the peat, you mix it up till you get a consistency where it's damp, but not overly moist. And so the two work great together. It helps the peat kind of starts to absorb some of that moisture. It helps to lock in that moisture a little bit better. It makes the substrate less fluffy. The cocoa fiber keeps the peat from being too dense and allows it to absorb water. Now, I like to add topsoil to my mixes as well. And this is something you can easily substitute topsoil for the peat if you'd like, and it's just as inexpensive. So if you're sitting there going, no, I don't want to use peat, I don't want that stuff around, by all means, try using some topsoil. Topsoil has wonderful properties because, as we talked about, it has all the stuff real dirt has in it, sometimes clay, sand, things of that nature. I've used the Timberline or Scotts brand of topsoil for years without issue. Again, the only time I had an issue is when I picked up that Agway crap. And those come in 40-pound bags that are around $2.60 each. So talk about cheap. You can go out of there with several bags of this stuff for under $10, which is fantastic. And each bag gives you around 6 1/4 gallons or 25 quarts. So we're going to use mostly cocoa fiber, some peat, and then we're going to mix in some of this lovely, thick, dense, heavy topsoil in there. And now you've got a batch of really wonderful substrate. If you dry it out, you've got something that works great for arid species. If you want have a burrowing or a fossorial species, this is going to be substrate that you can pack down in there, give them a starter burrow, they can burrow, and it's still going to allow you to put water in, dump water in, and have it percolate down to the bottom, sink into the substrate, rather than puddle and mud up top. I love this mixture. I think it's very versatile, and I think it's a good base if you want to try and experiment with other things that we'll talk about in a minute. So let's break down the cost and quantity we'll get out of this mixture here. So you bought your bag of peat that cost you $23.98 and yielded you about 19.3 gallons of dirt, We got the cocoa fiber. That was 15, but we'll call it 15 bucks. I'll go high. We got on the higher end, 15 bucks for that 10-pound brick, which gives us about 17 gallons of substrate. Next, we have our topsoil, which is about $2.60, which gives us about 6.25 gallons of substrate. So we're going to mix all those together, which you're going to need a big tub. And be aware, here's a heads up. If you have a tub that is super big and you're going to need to move it around, like I keep my tub usually in my garage and then I pull dirt out of it or fill things in the garage, it's not a big deal. I don't have to move it. But keep in mind that if you're doing this all in one giant tub, it's going to weigh a ton. The other thing to keep in mind is if you want to store your substrate, you can buy these giant freezer bags out there, these giant plastic like Ziploc bags that are great for putting the substrate in, closing them up, keeping them airtight so you don't get any mold and fungus while you're waiting to use them. I had a bag that I was using for over 2 years with substrate in that I mixed up for my slings that never had an issue with mold or anything. So a little heads up there. I think Ziploc makes them. They're huge, maybe 5 gallon bags, zip up, perfect. So we have our peat, $23.98. We have our cocoa fiber, $15. We have our topsoil, $2.60. $41.58, which is not bad at all, considering that is going to yield us around 42 gallons. 42 gallons of substrate. Now, as I talked about earlier, I have to rehouse a few Theraphosa species. We're talking about, say we have 10-gallon tanks. And say for the sake of argument, even though it's not going to be this much, I'm going to fill them all half full. So 5 gallons each. That's 15 gallons. Look at how much substrate that leaves me with. That's after using the 15, subtract from the 42, I'm left with approximately 27 gallons of substrate left over. That's fantastic. And when you consider, you know, you break down the gallons, the 42 gallons, you get 168 quarts. If the BioDude sells their bags, I believe there are 6 quarts per bag. So if you do the division out, you end up needing about 28 bags. Now, you can buy them in bulk with free shipping, which is the best deal. If you're looking for BioDude stuff, definitely look at that bulk shipping. And they do have good deals on it. So I don't want this to sound like I'm bashing BioDude. I'm not. I've used BioDude. I will continue to use some BioDude. I'm just explaining how you can save a lot of money if you're looking at that stuff and like, ah, oh, man, that's so much money. Here's how you can do it. So you're talking about you'd need about 9 of those bulk containers, bulk cases at $40, $39.95 each. So you're talking about $360 if you buy premium substrate. Now, obviously, with the premium substrate, you're getting different mixtures, things in there that we don't have in ours that we made. But that's a huge cost saving for somebody, you know, a handful of dollars to have so much dirt that you could pretty much set up anything with it. I mean, I think it factors out almost $42 for 42 gallons. So you're talking about $1 a gallon compared to other stuff. So that's a really huge savings for folks who want to have a good substrate like that don't maybe have the money to spend on it. Or if you're like me, it's tough to sit there and buy this wonderful dirt. The BioDude stuff's amazing. But when I have to dump it out, then I'm left with this huge pile of, it just looks like a big pile of wasted, rotting money, quite frankly. The old house, there was a huge pile of substrate, and the majority of this stuff was the BioDude stuff. So, and there's nothing worse than when you have a species, and I've done this before with some Chilobrachy species, where you have a species, you set it up, you use several gallons of this expensive substrate, the spider goes in there, a few weeks later comes out, it's a mature male. And now you have it in this beautiful house with all this substrate that I don't like reusing substrate. I know some people, if you reuse a substrate, this probably isn't as big of a deal. And it's probably not as big of a deal if you're reusing substrate with an old world where there aren't hairs and stuff kicked. But now all of a sudden you've used all this dirt, what are you going to do with it? So a huge, like $42, you, especially people with smaller collections, you have enough dirt to last you a long, long time. And that's why I started mixing this stuff to begin with back in the day, because I was starting to get more into fossorial species. I was starting to lean away from just setting up every quote unquote terrestrial spider on just a couple inches of dirt. I started realizing a lot of spiders out there, if given the room to burrow, will do a little bit of burrowing. So that's my base mixture right now. Now, one of the things I've been adding to it, there's 2 different additives you can add to it that will jack up the price a bit, unfortunately, still keep us in a pretty good area as far as, you know, how much money we're spending. One of the things you can add is vermiculite. I just bought a bag of horticultural vermiculite. Again, I mix it outside. I moisten it down ahead of time. I wear a mask when I use it. I don't want any dust in my nose, up my nose, and in my lungs, whether it be vermiculite or asbestos. This stuff is supposedly asbestos-free. It's been tested. But what I do is I mix in a couple quarts of vermiculite, and the vermiculite really allows it to absorb moisture better. So for those species that you're going to keeping a moisture-dependent species and you want that water to percolate down through, again, I can put a layer on the bottom, moisten it up, put the other dirt mixture on top of it, and I just practice. I set up my Theraphosa blondii enclosure. I'm waiting for my big female to molt, and she's getting a 10-gallon Lorax plastic enclosure. I've got about 7 inches of substrate on one side. It slopes down a little bit to probably 5. Packed it down well, went up, and I grabbed my little bottle that I used to moisten the substrate, poured the water down, and watched the water just percolate right down on through it. So when you're adding moisture, this allows it to absorb very easily. It soaks down through. The top can dry out. Bottom can stay moist. Works great. Now, if you don't want to use vermiculite, no problem. The other thing I will also use, and the only reason I didn't buy any of this is the price went up quite a bit, is New Zealand sphagnum moss makes a wonderful additive for something that'll help that soil absorb water. It comes in bales. Now, you can get a bale of New Zealand sphagnum moss. I think it's a 40-liter bale, around 42 quarts or so. And unfortunately, when I first bought my last bale, which I still have some, so that's how long it'll last you. But when I bought my last bale, it was around $25. I think it's gone up to around $40. I haven't been able to find it much cheaper. But still, it's going to last you a long time. What I usually like to do, this stuff is packed down, compressed really well. I fluff it up. I take a pair of scissors. I put on some music. And there's probably other ways to do this. Maybe you could blend it. I don't know. I find this kind of relaxing. I take clumps of it and I use scissors and I snip it into little like half inch pieces. And then I take that. After I have a whole bag of that, I add it to the substrate and I mix it up in. Again, it allows, it kind of serves the same purpose that a vermiculite can serve, where it allows the moisture to soak in better. If you have isopods and stuff, as this stuff will break down, it'll give the isopods something to eat. So a more natural way to do it, whichever you prefer. I'm sure there's folks on here that go, I am not messing with vermiculite. I totally understand. Then I would definitely check out the sphagnum moss. The good thing is they're both about the same price. Vermiculite, if you get it from a farm supply store, you can sometimes find it as inexpensive as $36 for a big 4-cubic-foot bale of it, and it lasts a long time. The last bag of vermiculite I purchased back when I bought that substrate years ago, like we're talking 5 years ago, and I just used up the rest of it. The New Zealand sphagnum moss, again, I bought it when it was almost half the price several years ago. So the stuff will last you a long time. And again, if you like working with dirt, you're not going to mind going through the sphagnum moss and cutting it up and adding. It's fun to mix this stuff up and get the qualities that you want in your dirt. Now, something else you can add to it, and I've done this, and I just added the last of mine. I got to go out and get another bag of it today. You can add sand to your mix. Mix some sand in, adds a little, supposedly the sand allows this stuff to percolate through. I found the sand can be iffy because sometimes it'll just clump up in certain spots, but it does add a little texture to it. It does add a little weight to it. I've used the white playground sand. You can buy the desert sand. You can usually find this stuff for around $20 for a 50-pound bag. The other thing I experimented with adding that I like for some of mine is the horticultural charcoal. I'm especially fond of putting this into enclosures that are going to have fossorial species in it because it has properties to help limit bacteria, clean things up. It's kind of like a natural filtration system, so wonderful for an enclosure you're going to be pouring water in, kind of like the same stuff, the activated charcoal, I think it is, that you use for aquariums. It kind of has the same type of thing where it helps filter the impurities out, so if you're going to have that animal in that for a long time, that would help. And that stuff, I haven't been able to find bigger bags of it. I'm sure, I know somebody chimed in several years ago and said that if you go to certain places, you can get it for really cheap. Around here, you usually get it at the hardware stores. You can find it on Amazon, and it's usually sold in 2-quart bags, around $10. I'm guessing you can find a lot bigger bags for probably around the same price. So please feel free to chime in if you know a place you can get this stuff, because I like adding it to my substrate mixes, especially when I'm going to have a spider that I know is going to be in that substrate for a long time. I know it's going to be a spider that I'm going to be adding water to that enclosure over and over and over again. It just gives me peace of mind that some of those impurities, those bacteria that could be forming there, will be filtered out. It'll be protected against them. And then something else you can add is clay. You can add clay to your substrate. Most substrates are like loamy. They have clay in them, like in real life where these spiders come from. So clay is something you can add. I'm going to be experimenting more with that. I know they have excavator clay that's usually made for the pet industry. The problem with excavator clay is it can be quite expensive for a small quantity. You're going to want a larger quantity. I did have somebody share a tip with me where you buy the all-natural cat, what is it, the kitty litter that's made out of this certain type of clay. And you can take that clay, put it in a blender. Granted, it's going to ruin your blender, so please don't use your wife or husband's blender and ruin it if they're using it, you know, every morning to make juices or whatever. But you can blend it up to a fine powder and mix that into a quantity that you're happy with. And that helps to make the substrate better for forming nice burrows, because as it dries out a little bit, it hardens up, creates a nice burrow. So clay is something I'm going to be doing a lot more experimenting with in the future. I did get some of the kitty litter stuff a while ago and tried to mix it with some. I didn't use a blender to break it down. I tried smashing it in a bag with a hammer, which didn't work all that well. And then I added it to some cocoa fiber peat mixture, add some water in. I didn't get the consistency I wanted, so I still need to play with it. But that's something else you can add. So all of those would obviously be tacked on to the price of what you're using. But even so, for under $100, you could easily have, and most folks would have enough substrate to do many, many, many rehousings for a long time. So that's what I'm using right now. I do have, again, as I mentioned, some of that New Zealand sphagnum moss. So I'm going to kind of do some cages with the New Zealand sphagnum moss, some with the vermiculite. I just purchased some new vermiculite that really, I really liked the way the mixture felt. I have this one, as I said, set up for my Theraphosa blondii, and it packed down really nice. It's holding the moisture on the bottom. I've had it airing out a bit, so the top level is kind of dried out a little bit, so it's not moist on the top where I have my leaf litter and such. But once you get down the burrow, it's moist down there. We'll see how that goes. I am going to set some up using the sphagnum moss so I can kind of show the difference. But whatever works for you. And again, people are going to ask me, the other thing people ask me is, well, what's the quantity? What is the percentage? I play it by ear. I mean, pretty much you heard what I got there as far as peat, cocoa fiber, and topsoil. I tend to mix all three of them all together, and that's what I get. It works great. And then I can add sand. I can add charcoal. I can add sphagnum moss, New Zealand sphagnum moss. I can add vermiculite. I can not add, like if I'm making a desert enclosure, I may use more peat, more dry peat, less cocoa fiber, maybe more topsoil, and some sand. You can play around with it. My tip would be to, if this is something you're looking into doing, get some Tupperware. Have a few of them. Have a place, A, where you can store this, where somebody's not going to get mad at you that you have Tupperware full of dirt. And make up different batches. Go through, make a batch that you think you want to use for an arid species. Make a batch, say you have some fossorial species, some moisture-dependent fossorial species. Make a batch for one of those. Make just an all-purpose terrestrial batch. Play around with it. See what works. I know I've mentioned many times that my son Ron and I years ago did like an experiment where we did a bunch of these mixtures and we basically looked at how well they absorbed water and then how well they retained water. So we mix up the substrate, we'd add in the same amount of water, would see which one evaporated first. It was a lot of fun. But, and again, I think for many of us, this is a fun part of the hobby. And I think for many of us, when we start getting these huge collections and get into keeping, you know, it's when you start off with slings, it's not a big deal. You can buy the expensive stuff. And there's some juveniles, you have smaller enclosures, not a big deal. When we start getting into 10-gallon enclosures and deep enclosures that allow, you know, a Kilo Brachy species or a Selenocosmia species to burrow, now you're talking some decent money if you're buying premium stuff. So this is what I'm using. I love it. I'm going to continue using this for a while. Again, I know it sounds like I'm harping on this, but I have a problem where if I say something in a podcast, somebody will take exception to it and then like do a rebuttal thing and I'll get bashed and I really don't feel like doing that anymore. So just to be clear, if you're using BioDude, continue to use BioDude. I love BioDude stuff. I have a bag of BioDude and I will tell you what I use it for is some of my slings and stuff because I like the consistency of it. I still use it for the smaller enclosures. It's just for the bigger ones, it becomes a bit cost prohibitive. So this is not a, hey, stop using BioDude thing. This is a, hey, for those of you who are looking at BioDude going, I'm not spending that kind of money for that, here's an alternative for you. That's what we're posing as. BioDude stuff, good stuff. Anybody that asks me, I tell them it's good stuff. I just had somebody go, do you still use BioDude? Do you still recommend it? I said, I'm not using as much of it these days, but I absolutely recommend it. So that's what I'm using. I would be curious to hear, A, from folks out there, what are you using for substrate? What are your mixtures? Reptisoil is another one people use a lot of. I've never used this stuff myself. Years ago, I had people ask me, can you use it? Can you use it? I'm like, I'd never used it. I meant to get a bag to try it out. I never did, but I know a lot of folks do use that. They had one, what was it, Lugardi's? I don't even know if that's around anymore. It was like premium gold substrate. I got a couple bags of it from them, and one bag was fine. One bag had more mold than normally, or more of that fungus that I normally get from just straight cocoa fiber. So I ended up not using it. It was also very expensive for the size of the bag you got. So I haven't used that. I don't even know if that's around anymore. But what are the premium ones you use? If you mix your own, what do you mix? Again, this isn't the be-all, end-all. This is just what I'm doing at the moment. I've used it before. It works for me. I'm not telling everybody you have to switch to this. What do you guys use? What are you up to? For folks overseas, particularly Europe, UK, Philippines, I get a lot of folks from here, Canada. I don't know. I'm assuming you guys get kind of a lot of the same stuff we get. But just in case you don't, what do you have up there? And what are you mixing up? And what are the costs? Anybody that wants to share that information with me, I would be incredibly appreciative. You can either, you know, if you want to shoot me an email, because it's going to be a long one, that's fine. If you want to leave a comment on Spotify, on the website, Tom's Big Spiders Podcast, whatever it may be, I would really like to next episode go and discuss how you can do kind of the same thing in different places. Because again, this isn't about just the American hobby. This is for anybody out there that's currently in the hobby. What do we got available? What can we mix up? I'm guessing some places may not have peat. Some places might not have vermiculite. I don't know. I would love to hear what you're using. I would love to share it. And obviously, I'll credit anybody that chimes in with their own personal experiences with what they're using for substrate. If you have premium stuff, if you're in one of those regions or one of those countries where you have somebody make something, because I know there's stuff over there that I see people that they're like, oh, I used blah, blah, blah in mine. And I'm like, I've never heard of that before. Please chime in. Let us know. This doesn't have to be all about cheap stuff. It's about all the alternatives we have out there. I've sung the praises of BioDude before. We've done that. Now here's the cheap version. What else do you guys have out there? This, unfortunately, I can't do this all on my own. I can probably do some research and come up with some stuff, but it would be great to hear from you all. So it's like real information from real keepers. What are you doing? What are you keeping them in? So that does it for the main part of this podcast. I did post up a YouTube video with two Formictopus species. I think it was Formictopus species Oriente, Formictopus species Sabana. And I know not a lot of folks have these, not a lot of interest in it. But again, for the folks that do, I've got that out there. We're trying to see right now if these are going to be anything unique. And I'm not holding out a lot of hope. I mean, they look beautiful. They look definitely different than the Formictopus, say, Cancerides I've raised before. But are they different enough to warrant the hefty price tag? I don't know. We'll have to see when they get a little bit larger. So that one's up there right now. The one I'm setting up for is my Theraphosa sturmi just molted. I was able to sex it out. It is a lady. Super excited to have a female sturmi in my collection again. I raised two sturmis years ago. And unfortunately, my female passed away after a molt. Can't help but blame myself that I did something wrong there. She was huge. The molt itself was like 9.5 inches or so. So she was a huge girl. She molted. I thought she looked great. Went to feed her, didn't eat, and then passed away. Still kills me. And she wasn't all that old. So hopefully this one, I can't wait to get her into a new enclosure. I'm going to do a video where it's all three Theraphosa species. And this time, I think the last time I did one on Theraphosa, a couple of mine, my Apophysis or Apophysis, were much smaller. My Sturmi was very small at the time. Now I'm able to show off big, beefy adults and subadults. So very excited about that one, hence why I've been mixing up all this substrate. I think that about does it for this one. As always, you can find me on YouTube. You can find me on thomasbigspiders.com, Thomas Big Spiders, the podcast. Guys, as always, stay safe. We'll catch you all next time.